paper. Dr. King's I Had a Dream address is now recognized as one of the greatest speeches in American history. All unrehearsed, all in the moment. And what a vitally important moment it was. I'm Tariq Lowe on the BIN.
This is Nnamdi Asamoah. I play football for the Philadelphia Eagles, but what I do off the field with United Way might be more important. I'm a volunteer tutor and mentor. Why? Because over a million kids a year drop out of school, and that's not...
Stevens on the Black Information Network.
What's your first name?
For what?
You're Marcellus, right?
Yeah, for what?
Yeah, you're under arrest, man.
Why?
Because I said...
This is when Marcellus Danette was alive and his girlfriend, Tafara Williams, wasn't injured. Waukegan, Illinois police just releasing additional video of the first encounter with the white cop. Reports are the cop couldn't find any warrants and the car sped away, with the cop saying they ran over him. The next portion of the video is a separate stop. This time, Hispanic cop Dante Salinas. Problem here, he turns on his police body cam after shooting the couple in the car.
I was right behind you. You almost tried to run me over.
Attorneys representing both families say the fact the cop involved in the shooting didn't have his body cam on is a problem. Civil rights attorney Ben Crump says when the camera is turned on, the officer immediately utters an excuse. Officer Salinas, a five-year veteran of the Waukegan Police Department, has been fired. Last year, he was sued for pistol-whipping a man during an arrest.
A third juror has now come forward from the Breonna Taylor proceedings, issuing a statement that the only charges presented by Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron's office was that wanton endangerment offense against fired cop Brett Hankinson, and no charges against the Louisville cops for killing Breonna.
Basically, in a nutshell, they said there were other possible charges that we considered, but nothing that we could make stick.
They never gave us the opportunity to deliberate on anything but the charges for Hinkleson. That was it. As a matter of fact, when they announced that those were the only charges, it was an uproar in that room.
Juror number three joins the two others who, even though they've kept their identities anonymous, have spoken out.
They didn't give us the charges up front. When they gave us all of that testimony over 20-something hours, and then to say that these are the only charges that they're coming up with, it's like, what did we just sit through? And then to be told that we're not charging them with anything else, to me, it was a betrayal.
The juror speaking on CBS to Gail King only adds to Breonna Taylor's family's demands for a new grand jury and a new prosecutor.
A man who spent 29 years in prison for a Brooklyn, New York murder he did not commit just had his conviction overturned. Gerard Domond is now a free man.
It's good to be home with the family. I got my mother. And I want to thank Ron Kuby for the overturn my conviction, for getting the time, for believing in me. And I want to thank my family for all those years they've been behind me. It's been a lot of, you know, people that didn't believe me, but now I'm just happy to be home with my family.
Domond was the victim of a DA who withheld key evidence about a man who claimed to be a witness in the case. Lawsuits are flying everywhere in this election. Reports are more than 230 election-related federal lawsuits have already been filed. Nearly every state has a case, from felons suing for the right to vote to allowing the ill and elderly to vote curbside, extending deadlines for ballots to arrive, fears of getting coronavirus while voting, and there are the allegations of mail-in ballot fraud, issues that will continue to be fought well beyond Election Day. I'm Vanessa Tyler, along with Mike Stevens, on the Black Information Network.
It's time to focus with Robert McKay. Quality conversation, protecting, preserving, and preparing our past, present, and future. Sunday evenings at 4 p.m. on the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
The views expressed on our programs are not necessarily those of WVON, Midway Broadcasting Corporation, or our participating sponsors.
Broadcasting live from the Xfinity Studios at WVON, it's T.O. Hardiman, Mr. Ceasefire, on the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
Paid the cost to be the boss. What?
My people on WVON 1690 AM this morning. You're here with Brother T.O., Mr. Ceasefire Hardeman. And I wanted to do something different this morning and start out with Brother James Brown, Paid the Cost to Be the Boss. Kind of puts you in the mind of, you know, a lot of real cool days here growing up in the city of Chicago, in other words. So I felt real good about that song there. And most important, we have a lot to talk about today. You know, we got vote, vote, vote. That's what's coming up. But first and foremost, I would like to acknowledge two of my sponsors here. We've got YCCS, that's Youth Connections Charter Schools. If you know a young person in Chicago between the ages of 16 and 21 years old and they dropped out of high school, if you would like to enroll them back in high school, you can visit YCCS.org. Visit their website so you can enroll that young person back into high school. They can obtain their high school diploma. Also, Dr. Willie Wilson, he's running for U.S. Senate. So we're seeing Dr. Willie Wilson. I want to mention his name. He's doing the best he can do to keep himself out there and keep hope alive for everybody throughout the entire state of Illinois. So Dr. Willie Wilson for U.S. Senate. So before we get deep into my subject matter of today, the vote, 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 I want to thank Brother Terry Bishop, the super producer here on the show this morning. And before we get all the way into it, I want to just put some numbers out there so we will not forget what's going on out here throughout the nation and what's going on, because even though this presidential election is up for grabs right now, Biden appears to be leading the charge. But in the meantime, you still got coronavirus and you got gun violence taking place in Chicago, serious levels of gun violence in Chicago. So let me put these numbers out there before we get deep here. All right. We got so far from January of 2020 to the end of October, 669 homicides in Chicago and 3,500 people shot in Chicago so far this year to date. And you have in October alone, 66 people were killed in the month of October alone. So I don't, you know, I'm not going to get too deep into it this Sunday, but next Sunday we plan to take this on a higher level. Now, dealing with the coronavirus nationwide, we're looking at, in Illinois, we're looking at about, get these numbers right, 411,000 cases, but 10,000 dead in Illinois. That's Illinois, but nationwide, worldwide really is not, no, nationwide, let me get it right, 9.2 million with 230,000 deaths. So coronavirus is still creeping in there on a lot of people. And if you have underlying conditions, you end up coming down with coronavirus, it's hard to really, really overcome it, all right? It's hard to overcome it, right? So that's what we're dealing with there. And before I get started, I just want to wake everybody up this morning. And I always sing a little something on my show. I might sing in the beginning or the end, but I just got this OJ's tune that just hit my mind a little bit. I've sang it before. I just want to wake everybody up. And then we'll get started with our phone calls and to the overall discussion. Here we go. You're my darling, darling baby. You're my sweet and tender love. You're a very special lady. I said you're everything I hoped and prayed for in a woman. I just want to put that out there for everybody. Just feeling kind of good on Sunday morning. So here we go. So let's take our first caller, Brother Hall, to talk about the Hot Skillet Show. Then we're going to take Dr. Rhonda Sherrod, will be calling in a few minutes. Let's take on Brother Hall for a minute. Come on, Brother Hall.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning, Brother Teal. How you doing, man?
Doing good. Doing good.
Good, good, good. Yeah, first of all, let me just thank you once again for featuring on the Hot Skillet last week. We certainly appreciate your spirit and your commentary. This week, we will have Representative Ford on the Robert McKay Show, The Focus, at 4. And certainly we're looking forward to that. So just wanted to let the community know that if you want to be or have a commentary on the Hot Skillet, since we're doing it from the community level, we would like for you to call the Robert McKay Show, leave your name and number, and we will get back with you. so you can express your views. And I thank you so much, brother, once again, for opening up our show with the new form of the hot skillet. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you, Brother Hall. That's what's happening there. So that's the hot skillet. Brother Hall, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Give me the time for the show again so all the people know.
The time is 4 o'clock.
Right.
And that will be on the Robert McKay Show, which is The Focus. And we look forward to hearing the your listening audience at 4 o'clock.
Okay, good. Good stuff. Appreciate you.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you as well.
Anytime, Brother Hall, always. So that's what's going on, everybody. So today we're dedicating the show to vote, vote, vote. And as you notice, the presidential election is coming up on Tuesday. And what we got going on, we can look at the last presidential election and looking at some of the numbers where Trump, he secured about 62 million votes nationwide, and Hillary secured about 65 million votes, give or take. And Trump had 46% of the vote, and Hillary Clinton had 48%. That's why they say she won the popular vote, everybody. And so we'll see. It seems like it's going to play out a little the same way with Biden right now, but we really don't know. But Biden does have a serious edge on Trump, so we'll see how that plays itself out. You got rapper Lil Wayne. He just endorsed President Trump, and Lil Wayne kind of reminds me of Flavor Flav, you know, the kind of way he carries himself or whatever. I don't know, you know, but that's what's going on. So I don't know about anything really helping Trump right now. You had this situation where Trump came up with a platinum plan for black folks. Now, for me, that's kind of crazy to me, because everybody in the black community is not caught up in no platinum anything. It reminds me of a platinum gold chain, or somebody sold some platinum records. They sold so many copies of their album, went platinum and all that stuff. Everybody continues to play on black people's psychology. We need to stop this mess, because the reality, the conditions in our community have not really changed when it comes down to the heart of the ghetto. When it comes to the heart of the concrete jungle, the ghetto areas in Chicago, 79th Street, 63rd Street, 47th Street, Madison and Pulaski, 16th and Lawndale, the conditions have not changed for our people. So we need to stop playing these platinum games with black folks so we can begin to really rebuild our communities on a higher level. You know, I'm fighting for reparations. That's what I'm fighting for. If they're not talking about reparations, there's nothing to talk about. Real talk, brothers and sisters. So I just want to say that to you. So we're going to get right into the discussion today. A young lady reached out to me. Her name is Dr. Rhonda Sherrod, and she wanted to come on today to talk about the importance of the state's attorney's race right here in Cook County. You got Kim Fox running, and you have this O'Brien running against her. But for those who don't know, Cook County, Chicago has been ran by the machine for so long, and I'm not going to get caught up in machine politics, because I see myself more of a individual that just speaks truth to power and just steps up to the plate. I don't have time for all that stuff, but I want to hear from this sister. And what's really amazing about the sister, she's a doctorate. You know, I looked at her resume, her bio, and all that good information, and I will allow her to say a little bit about herself as well, but I just want to thank the young lady, because whenever you got a sister in particular that has a doctorate degree, that's important. And all the young people out there, and everybody, you know, if you would like to pursue your education, I would like to encourage you to pursue your education. I do teach as an adjunct professor in restorative justice, criminal justice, and we are intellectual thought leaders. Do not allow nobody to tell you anything different. We are leaders in our own right. So with everything being said and done here this morning, I'm on a roll, as you can see, so let me slow it down a little bit. So with that being said, I would like to bring Dr. Rhonda Sherrod on the air.
Yeah. Good morning.
How you doing, Dr. Sherrod?
I'm doing fantastic. And thank you so much for allowing me to be on the wonderful WVON radio that has done so much in our community. I've listened to WVON since I was a little girl.
Yes.
And this state's attorney's race is extremely important.
So let me interrupt you for a minute, Doctor, if you don't mind. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Dr. Rhonda Sherrod, because I wanted my audience to become familiar with you being a doctor, a young lady here in Chicago.
Sure. So I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, in fact, in Maywood. And so lifelong Cook County resident. I attended the University of Illinois and the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa, Roll Tide. And I also got my law degree. I received my law degree at the University of Texas at Austin.
Right on.
And I practiced law for about 13 years and decided to go back and get my doctorate in clinical psychology. Mm. And one of the reasons I decided to go back and get my doctorate is because I was so disgusted with the things I saw in the criminal justice system, and in fact, even in the civil world. So I decided to go back and get my doctorate in clinical psychology because always I've been cognizant of wanting to make sure that my scholarship is used for community action. Always wanted to do things in the community to advance in the tradition of Thurgood Marshall and so many others who have come before me, wanted to advance my community. And I think the combination of law and psychology has given me an opportunity to see our people at every range on the spectrum, from tragedy to good things. And unfortunately, I've seen too much tragedy, especially in the criminal justice system.
Okay.
So that's what, you know, pretty much fueled my desire to go back and get my doctorate.
Sounds good.
So I focus on healing in the Black community, surviving, healing, and, you know, making sure that we're reaching our maximal potential.
Okay. So let me ask you this question here then. So why is the state's attorney race so important in Cook County right now, based on your experience and what you've seen and what's going on with the criminal justice system overall and all the, you know, injustice and police brutality, excessive force, wrongful convictions? Why is the state's attorney's race so important right now with Kim Fox and this Pat O'Brien? I think that's the guy's name, Pat O'Brien, right?
Right.
Okay.
So, you know, we can, all of us can go back into our own backgrounds. We don't even have to be attorneys to understand that there are so many disparities in the system. You know, if you went to a high school where, you know, perhaps the demographics were such that you had more white students than Black, you could see that even in high school, when students would unfortunately get into a little trouble, the disparities between how Black students were treated and white students were treated was very real. When I was at Proviso East High School, you know, we had a very strong white population. And not the kids got into trouble, you know, deep trouble, but just insubordination and things that now, unfortunately, Black kids are being put through this school to prison pipeline for. Folks didn't get into trouble for into the kind of trouble that they're getting into now back then for those kinds of offenses. So moving forward, at the college level, you saw white students getting, you know, involved in drugs, you know, on the quad. You could just always used to say, you know, if there's a so-called war on drugs, all you have to do is go to the average predominantly white university and go to the quad, and you'll see drugs being used all the time. So how is it that so many African Americans are locked up for these nonviolent offenses? So moving forward, when I first got out of law school, I was more interested in civil rights kinds of work than criminal justice, but I wanted to be cognizant of what was going on in the criminal courts. Mm-hmm. So I used to sit in the courtroom and just observe what was going on in these courtrooms. And I'm telling you, the things that I saw just made my heart break. I'll never forget seeing a white defendant come up, and this was his eighth time having blown an opportunity to get rehabilitation, drug rehabilitation. And the judge was giving him a ninth opportunity. Okay, this is the last time. Don't ever come in my courtroom again. And you had the sense that he said that over and over and over. And at the same time, you'd see Black kids who had no criminal background, may have even been in college, coming up for a first-time offense, a nonviolent offense, something that could have easily been taken care of with a more restorative plan. And they would be bound over for trial and have to go to trial. And then the wreckage that this causes in our communities, Black people having to mortgage their homes or borrow money to pay lawyers. I'll never forget the late Judge Eugene Pinchem. Eustace talk about how crime does pay. He said it pays everybody who works in these criminal justice systems, from, you know, probation officers to court clerks to judges to lawyers on both sides. So it is a the prison industrial complex is a money making venture.
Yeah, let me just say this to you, Dr. Sherrod, because I just want to you know, just interact with you here. Yeah, for sure. And I totally agree with you, because my theory is Black death is a hustle. And Black incarceration is a hustle just as well, all right? That's the reason why a lot of penitentiaries were built downstate, where, you know, a lot of our people are shipped to them penitentiaries, so it helps the economy in some of these downstate communities, and then cities and towns, rather. And then the same thing plays out across the nation. So what I want to ask you is this, and now with Kim Fox, the current state's attorney, I know she's put forth some measures to kind of help, you know, reduce recidivism with some of the younger people. Am I right or wrong about that? Because I know Kim Fox personally, but I know she's done the best she can do to try to help alleviate some of the criminal justice issues here in Cook. Is that correct?
Oh, that's absolutely correct. Kim Fox has achieved practically iconic status among progressive people who want to see this criminal justice system. I hesitate to even say reformed, because the problems run so deep, they actually have to be, as they say today, reimagined. And, yes, she's doing a fantastic job, winning awards, and all kinds of articles are being written about her because she gets it. She's a woman who's from the community and who understands the kinds of injustices that are taking place. And this whole law and order kind of rhetoric that's being pushed out here again, yet again, because it's not the first time. You know, we heard that under Nixon. We heard that under Reagan. These are just catchphrases and dog whistles and buzzwords for locking up Black people for offenses that they should not be locked up for. And Kim Fox is doing a fantastic job of not only making sure that people are not going through the process when they don't need to, because understand that prosecutors have tremendous discretionary power. If something is presented to me, I don't have to prosecute. I can come up with all kinds of restorative plans, especially with people who have no criminal background and who have not committed any kind of violent offense. I can come up with all kinds of ways to see to it that they get some kind of deferred prosecution. And what that means is I'll tell you, okay, T.O., you were caught with drugs or whatever. This is what I'm going to do. If you will stay clean and maybe do some community service at some drug rehabilitation center for 6 months, then we will drop the charges. That's deferred prosecution. There are so many different angles from which a prosecutor can come. I don't even have to file charges if I don't see it as something that is necessary and furthers the public good or furthers public safety.
But so what you're saying, so the state prosecutors have discretionary type of cases, which they can the outcome can be basically to their discretion. In other words, you got restorative justice programs, you have community courts and all that kind of good stuff there going on. So basically what you're saying, which we pretty much know a little bit about it, how what happens is that in the suburban areas, some other kids from other races may get a slap on the wrist or something like that, and then African-American young people end up in the system unnecessarily, and then their whole lives begin to take a different shape or meaning, because once a person has a conviction on his or her record, it gets harder for them to seek gainful employment and harder for them to actually secure, you know, opportunities like a lot of other people. Am I right?
Exactly.
So that's what happened. So Kim Fox, now her opponent, now I noticed there's a lot of negative ads going back and forth, and that's something I really don't like. You know, I ran for governor before myself, and the polls had me at 5% in 2014, and I closed out with 28.1%. The only reason I'm mentioning that to you is because negative ads, and they need to do away with the polling system, number one. That's what I truly believe, and just let people run for office. But when it comes to the negative attacks on people, what does that really have to do with that person getting the job done? I can see if a person was convicted of heinous crime or something like that, but a lot of this negativity just really needs to stop, in my opinion, because even in the presidential election, it becomes Hollywood. Hollywood.
Exactly.
And people out here losing their lives every day. They dying from coronavirus. They dying from gun violence. And it's a life sentence when you're wrongfully convicted. I hear stories about people doing 25, 30 years of being released
exactly.
this year. That's a life. That's a lifetime conviction on a person. So so what more do you want to share about the state's attorney race that you think people should really understand or comprehend, Dr. Sarai?
Well, I think it's important that we recognize that Cook County has a well-deserved reputation for being for corruption yeah. in offices like the state's attorney's office. So, you know, we can go back years and years and years, but prominently, I would say, like in 1999, the Chicago Tribune did an analysis of prosecutors in Cook County, and they talked about how prosecutors in Cook County saw convictions set aside where they were involved in prosecutorial misconduct,
yes.
ranging from concealing what we call exculpatory evidence, which means that, you know, this is evidence that tends to suggest that perhaps the defendant is not guilty. And so the state is supposed to turn that kind of information over pursuant to a United States Supreme Court ruling in the Brady case. So they weren't, they were concealing exculpatory evidence, making improper or misleading statements and arguments, hiding evidence, improperly excluding Black people from juries. And when all of these, this is not justice. What we want is a state's attorney who is about trying to bring about justice. We want safe communities, of course, but we don't want people to be just locked up and throw the key away just for the sake of saying, oh, you know, I have X number of convictions. That's not what this is about.
Yeah, because
and so
it becomes,
what we have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now it becomes, it becomes a number game, because even with the homicide raid in Chicago and all the people being shot, what happens is that the police department, I'm not against the police, but what the police department does, they use the numbers to justify the need for more funding and more overtime. But the killings and the shootings are not decreasing, but everybody's getting an overtime check. The average police officer making over $100,000, all right, because of the gun violence in Chicago. 88% of the gun violence victims are Black folks. That's why I say Black death is a hustle. Everybody's hustling off our people one way or the other. The prison industrial complex, you know, the
exactly.
list goes on and on. So this is what's going on, Dr. Sherrod. Just hang in there with me for a minute. I got Brother Paul. Brother Paul, I want you to hang in there, Paul, and call back at 7:35, 6:35. Sorry about, you know, time went back. 6:35, Brother Paul, if you can do that for me, I appreciate it, because I want to make sure that Dr. Sherrod gets all the information out. So here you go again, Dr. Sherrod. You keep it going.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I also want to just remind people of, you know, the atrocious case of Laquan McDonald.
Yeah.
And, you know, the aftermath of that was a 9-member police accountability task force. And, you know, in their own report, they talked about how CPD's own data gives validity to the widely held belief the police have no regard for the sanctity of life when it comes to people of color. Now, again, you know, of course we know that there are good officers out here, but this is a systemic problem. It has nothing to do with good cops and bad cops. And when we frame it like that, we're not doing justice to the fact that there is an ongoing problem. You know, policing in itself comes out of, especially in the South, comes out of the need to trace down and track down runaway enslaved people. So, you know, from the very beginning, policing has been about trying to capture and destroy Black lives. And we have to be very clear on that, because until we understand the issues, you know, you talk about going back to the fugitive slave laws, you know, where people were running after folks who had the audacity to want to be free, like any other human being wants to be. So we have to be real clear about how these problems have developed. These problems did not develop overnight. This is centuries of problems.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's going to take a lot to fix these problems. And we need someone who understands the problems, who's forceful in trying to bring about change, and who is clear on what the mission is. We need someone who understands the system from top to bottom so that the changes that need to be made can be made.
Without a doubt. Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Sherrod, for coming on my show today. And what I would like to do is have you come back on periodically to weigh in on a lot of these topics when it comes down to the judicial system and when it comes down to criminal justice and restorative justice. It would be an honor to have you to come on and as like to just speak about it and bring people, you know, bring their awareness levels up a little bit more about what's going on, presenting numbers and a lot of different information as well.
I would love to. Okay. And if I can just say this before I get off.
Yes.
So we're talking about, you know, you mentioned the cost factor and the
yes.
people who are getting paid. I'll never forget reading in a book called The Real War on Crime. They were talking about how these prisons, you know, every profession has an association, you know, the Bar Association and, you know, the American Psychological Association and so forth. Well, there are associations for prisons, too. And I'll never forget reading an advertisement that said, you know, come to the American Jails Association convention. There's big money to be made, billions of dollars, because when you stop and think about it, Keo, what does someone who's incarcerated, even if the person is wrongly incarcerated, needs when he's in jail or prison? Well, the same things that anybody else needs, you know, soap, towels, health care,
yes,
toilet paper, you know, toothpaste, toothbrushes. And so you have people who are making millions of dollars supplying these kinds of goods to these prisons and jails. So, yes, it's a prison industrial complex and there's big money to be made. And Black people are, as one criminologist said, the raw materials being okay. used in these prisons and jails.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Sherrod. This is a real good conversation. Appreciate you very much for calling in.
Thank you.
All right.
Take care.
Okay.
Get out and vote, everybody.
Yeah. Vote, vote, vote. That's right.
Right.
Okay, good stuff. So this is what's happening, everybody. I want to thank Dr. Sherrod once again, but at the same time, she talked about the prison industrial complex. That's why brothers like me, I need it out here because we speak truth to power. I would like to know who has the contract for collect calls in the penitentiary, right? I want to know who has the contract for supplying toilet paper and soap. Rapper Twister and my good friend Creative Scott from the North Lyndale area, they took about 3,000 bars of soap down to Stateville Prison last week, and they took the guards down there some donuts and stuff like that, which I thought it was just a real kind gesture, you know, from Brother Twister and my man Creative Scott. So with that being said, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to bring Brother Paul right on, Brother Paul. So just hanging there with me, and then Mama D and what now, and a few of the phone lines are really, really, like, lighting up right now. So let's take a quick commercial break before we bring Brother Paul on. All right.
Hi, T.O. Hardiman here, president of Violence Interrupters Incorporated. You know, there's an old saying that it takes an entire village to raise one child. So let's work together to help end this senseless gun violence here in Chicago, one person at a time. For more information, visit my website at violenceinterrupters.org or call me directly at area code 773-391-9072. 773-391-9072. Together we can win. Peace.
Do they know who you are? They need to know who you are. Let Bishop Promotions of America promote your clothing line, restaurant, political campaign, website, church, and more. Sound and video recording now available. Whatever your project or product, Bishop can make it hot.
This is Terry Bishop, working with your budget to maximize exposure.
Follow him on all social media platforms at hashtag Bishop Promotes You. Contact Terry Bishop today at BishopPromotesYou.com or call 773-392-9866. That's 773-392-9866. Let Bishop promote you.
All right, we're back, everybody. So with everything being said this morning, I have brother Paul Pearson coming on my show in a few seconds here. He's the founder of the DuSable Community Coalition. This brother wants to talk about a lot of the judges that are running for office right now, and one judge in particular, and this particular judge, and how this judge actually rolled back a lot of the resources for juveniles here in Cook County, the juvenile justice system. So we're definitely concerned about juveniles. And so I would like to hear what this brother has to say. So let's bring Brother Paul Pearson on the line right now. Brother Paul, come on with it, Brother Paul.
Thank you, Brother T.O., for having me this morning. WBON family, we want to thank you as well for keeping the voice strong and alive. Dr. Sherrod just gave some very important, significant information related to our sister Kim Fox. We got to stand with that sister, get out and vote if we haven't voted already, to make sure that her reforms to the prosecutorial office are followed and we are not continuously prosecuted or over-prosecuted, as they say, for menial crimes. With that being said, Brother Hardiman, thank you again so much for having me this morning. We're not talking about who we want to vote for. Okay. In this particular conversation,
gotcha.
Judges are voted to either be retained or non-retained. In this instance, we're looking at the presiding judge over the Cook County Juvenile Temporary Detention Center.
Okay.
A justice by the name of Michael Tooman. He's been on the bench now for 10 years. He was elected in 2010 as a Democrat, hiding under his role, which is really a Republican purview. But with that being said, this justice himself was a 17-year-old juvenile offender. What does that mean? He stole a police car up in Evanston, went on a rampage, was arrested, and actually his father was head of the Republican Party, pulled some strings, got his son into a restorative program, which was called the United States Military. He went on to Northwestern University and graduated with a law degree from DePaul University. And now he is one of the most punitive judges that the juvenile courts have seen since its inception.
So let me interrupt you for a second here. So you're saying the judge that's sitting over the Cook County, presiding over the Cook County juvenile systems, was a juvenile offender himself. Is that's what you're saying?
Exactly.
But he had he had divine intervention from his father, who had some relationships with some high-level people. Am I right?
That is exactly what we're saying.
All right, let's keep it rolling. Keep it rolling. All right.
So what is it that we need? If you haven't voted already, we need to start looking at our judges in our community. As we look at the Cook County Juvenile Temporary Detention Center, is what they call it, we see that there's over 90% black youth. Research from Northwestern University and other colleges across this country have shown that youth commit crimes at exactly the same rate, irregardless of race. But yet still, as the sister alluded to earlier, we understand that they make $187,000 a year per youth per head.
Wow. Okay.
To detain them inside of a box does not help at all.
Let's do this for a minute, Brother Paul. Clarify that number for me. You said they make $187,000 a year per youth. That's what you're saying?
That is according to the research by Northwestern University. The cost to detain a youth for a year's period of time is $187,000 a year. We're talking about $500 to $600 a day.
Okay.
Again, youth receive services that adults do not. But Judge Tooman is one who was trying to take away at least those resources that we do have in the youth courts that is supposedly in the best interest of the child. He's twisted that and converted it to make our young people into animals when most, the 60% of those young people that are detained for status offenses.
Okay.
Nonviolent, non-criminal actions.
Wow. So, yeah, nonviolent. Oh, wow, that's something else there. Now, let me ask you this, too. Now, I've been hearing a little about the numbers there. Now, the juvenile detention center, the numbers have been reduced already. You don't have as many young people incarcerated over there as you had maybe, let's say, 5 years ago. Is that correct?
That is correct. But the disproportionality
of
youth that are detained, are incarcerated there, remains as high as it was 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. It's still 90% black. That tells us that we are being targeted as a community.
Okay.
As Dr. Sherrill spoke earlier, the same situation that a young person from our community south of the west side of Cook County, Chicago, Illinois, comes up against is likely to be detained, whereas if someone has a background similar to that of presiding Judge Tooman, they are more likely to be put on a path and trajectory into Northwestern University or the college of their choice or the career field of their choice.
Okay.
So we've got to get this judge off the bench and get someone in there, not just removing this judge, but making sure that we demand that Timothy Evans, my former alderman, that we institute someone who understands restorative practice. Maybe a brother T.O. Hardeman could preside over that court to help our young people get back on track.
Without a doubt, Brother Paul. And then before you get out of here, I just want to say I want to thank you for enlightening the people here, because when it comes down to the juvenile court system, that's where it starts at. You know, a lot of stories about young people that did not receive the help they really needed or the guidance, then they end up in the penitentiary system for the next, you know, 20 years in their lives. And we have to just work hard as leaders in Chicago, because right now, you know, in my opinion anyway, this is just T.O. talking. The views expressed on this show are just my views. It's not the views of WVON. So I'm one of them guys that speak truth to power no matter what. I'm the guy that you can put in front of a firing squad, and I still plan to speak truth to power. You understand me, brother?
Yes,
brother Paul? Yes, indeed. So the reality right now is that young people need a lot of help here. No, the high unemployment rates for African-American young men between ages of 16 and 25 is a staggering, like it's a little bit over like 50-60% right now. And that is really unacceptable. Now, there are a lot of different variables that go into the unemployment rates. But I'm sure that once a person has been incarcerated as a young person, 9 times out of 10, they end up being transferred to the adult prison. And the beat goes on and on and on. And we have to find different ways when it comes down to making money in Illinois instead of just locking everybody up. See, when I ran for governor, what I wanted to do, let me just say this, I wanted to build another penitentiary. And I know people say you don't want to build no more jails, but the penitentiary that I was planning on building would be an institution for higher learning. I plan to place computers in the cells with reading, math, and science on the computer only. Only reading, math, and science. And all inmates will be required to study while they're in prison. They could get a reduction on their sentence as long as they can pass some courses and study, because it's crazy why people go in jail. Now, don't get me wrong. The state of Illinois, they're down about 10,000 inmates compared to some years ago. There was about 52,000 inmates in the state of Illinois. So recidivism is kind of like about 50% right now. For those who don't know, let me just clarify. And when it comes to people going in and out of prison, it's around 50% in Illinois. Now, the prison population is around 42,000 right now in the state of Illinois. So do you know the number? What's the population of young people in Cook County in the juvenile detention center? Do you know that number, Brother Paul?
Yes, Brother Hardeman. About Laquan McDonald time frame, so
okay.
Was up from maybe 5 years ago, we were up to about 800 on a daily basis.
Okay.
That number has been reduced, and we're grateful and humbled that it is. We're down to about 200 youth being detained. Now, here's the reality. We've got to look at that from not just the numbers game, but from the disproportionality of black youth being detained. It's still 90%. Recidivism rate in the youth detention center is 60%.
Okay, got it.
That means these young people are going in and coming right back out, and they know that at one small status offense, they're going to be right back in that facility where they'll have those dollars coming back in from the Fed and the state to secure funding, budgeting dollars for detaining them in this unfair, unequal system.
Okay.
I do want to close with this, Brother Teal, and I want to thank you again so much for having this conversation, so that our people know, vote not to retain Judge Tooman in the Cook County Juvenile Courts or any courts in the state of Illinois, to be quite honest with you. But we also want to make sure that people know, hey, our young people are in there under COVID-19 as we speak. There was an emergency petition filed by the Juvenile Public Defender's Office, along with some of the state's attorneys, to release some of our young people during this pandemic. Judge Tooman put a stop to it and says that the prosecutorial office and the defense office has no say in who gets to have a hearing. So he closed all hearings so that our young people could not get out. That impacts not just the young people who may come in with COVID-19, but the staff, which is also 90% black.
Okay.
From it exposes them to potential life-threatening harm through COVID-19. So we're really facing a racialized pandemic here in the state of Illinois, here in the county of Cook, here in the city of Chicago, that we've got to find a way to overcome. And unless our people vote, unless they get out and let their voices be heard, we're going to stay in this cycle that we've been in for over 400 years now.
Okay, appreciate you, Brother Paul. That means a lot to me, what you're talking about, and I look forward to having you on the show again in the near future.
Thank you, Brother Hardeman, and peace and love to my family out there. Let's keep doing what we're doing. Stay on top of it.
Yes, indeed. Respect. All right, so that's what's going on, Brother Hall. So let's keep in mind you have a lot of intellectual thought leaders in the black community that speak truth to power. And they have a lot of a wealth of information they share on this show and all the shows on WVON. So we're going to keep the conversation going this morning. So let's bring Mama D on. She's been holding for a while. Then we get to Brother Chris after Mama D. And then, and what now? That's somebody calling in as well. Mama D, how you doing this morning?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm always doing good, always.
We as indigenous Native Black American descendants of crimes against humanity and Jim Crow genocide survivors are under a different citizenship. Let me say that again, under a different citizenship. And we need to stop associating ourselves with black and brown and people of color, which is reverse segregation because everybody has a color, including the color white. The problem is we are suffering from four generations of untreated heart, mind, subjugated syndrome, white supremacy, poverty damage, that we are representing others instead of ourselves. The statuary settlers who have already received a governmental leg up Dream Act based on privilege. They are not citizens and they cannot vote. Yet they are being rewarded for their criminal behavior, being rewarded with citizenship after breaking into this country, and they are a top priority. And Biden, who already gave $12 million to some Holocaust survivors, and their Holocaust didn't even happen here, he says we owe them. In conclusion, we indigenous black Americans must modify the 13th Amendment that abolished individual ownership of slaves and changed it into institutional ownership of slaves through incarceration.
Yes.
So we need to be tried under the 2007 American Genocide Accountability Act. We need to be tried under that. And if we're going to associate ourselves with any color, why don't we say black and red instead of black and brown, because we are twin victims. The red man and black man are twin victims of the American genocidal Holocaust. So why don't we associate ourselves with black and red instead of black and all these other colors? That's my question.
Thank you, Mama D. I appreciate Mama D. And before we take another quick commercial break, I just want to say, out of respect to Mama D, what most people don't remember, Terry Bishop, before Malcolm X was killed, our dear brother Malcolm, he was in the process of taking the United States government to the United Nations courts for human rights violations. See, people don't understand the magnitude of what Brother Malcolm was about to move forward on. So what Mama D is saying is correct. See, because even I get tired of everybody trying to put our movement and everybody else's movement together. Black folks must unify, stand together, stick together, do everything they have to do in order to look out for the next generation to come. Our ancestors, they fought hard to be liberated because they wanted to make sure that the next two or three generations to come were doing much better than what they were, the hand they were dealt with, in other words, all right? So this is all important. So with that being said, Dr. Willie Wilson is running for U.S. Senate. Dr. Willie Wilson and one of my other sponsors is Youth Connections Charter School. You can visit the website, yccs.org, if you want to learn more information. If you have a young person in your family between the ages of 16 and 21 years old and they need to re-enroll back in high school and obtain their high school degree, visit yccs.org. And with that, we'll take a quick commercial break. Then I'll get Brother Chris and then what now and the other callers on. All right, commercial break.
Hi, this is Lo Brown, the CEO and founder of Mental Beauty Supply, a beauty company that beautifies people all over the world, inside and out, with the health, barber, and beauty supply products they just cannot live without. And this is all done via vending machine. For franchise opportunities or for more information, go to mentalbeautysupply.com or contact me at 815-793-1325, mentalbeautysupply.com, or contact me at 815-793-1325. keep persevering, but most importantly, y'all, keep hustling.
All right, we're back on air. We got quite a few calls still here, and let's take another call. Let's bring on Brother Chris, and then we'll get to And What Now. All right, Chris.
Hey, good morning.
How you doing?
Good. Thank you for taking my call. We have to protect and embrace Sister Kim Fox, who has given some parity and relief, you know, to the black community. We have to historically look at that, attorney's office, Dick Devine, Daly, Anita Alvarez, and how blacks and browns didn't get a fair shake. The lack of prosecuting, rogue officers, the similar crimes committed by, our white counterparts, the disparity was never there. She attempted to come in, clean it up, with the people wrongly convicted. You got people still locked up from when Daly was state's attorney, and he turned a blind eye with Burge. People was doing, and some people still locked up 30, 40 years, of their life, and they got no relief. And you see, the money that they put prosecuting certain neighborhoods. There was a book, I think it was called The War on Neighborhoods. It showed how much money they spent prosecuting people versus, making, systems to get training, education. You can look at the disparity and what they believe in, the money, the TIF money on the Lincoln Yards, when TIF money supposed to go for, impoverished areas to upbring them. You think Lincoln Park millionaires need TIF money,
And yeah, I'm familiar with the TIF money process, how the money was mismanaged by a lot of different administrations here in the city of Chicago, without a doubt.
And just look at, like I said, when Anita Alvarez was there, she was on 60 Minutes talking about cases where these young brothers were found by cleared by DNA evidence, and she said she didn't care; they still were guilty. Mm. You see, the brother who killed Commander Paul Bauer, he for sure locked up the rest of his life. But Jason Van Dyke, but for the video, all them officers who lied and Van Dyke maybe got 4 years, and Alvarez, she filed the wrong charges in the Dante Servine case where he shot into a crowd. But like I said, we got to embrace, support Kim, our sister Kim, and the women state's attorneys around this country are catching hell. But thank you to you.
Hey, Brother Chris, I appreciate you bringing up Dante Servine. I stood up for the family of Rekia Boyd, the young lady that was shot when he shot in the crowd. And then, with Kim Fox and a lot of elected officials here in Chicago and Cook County, I want you all to hear me clearly. A lot of people would not be in office if it was not for Laquan McDonald. Let's make that clear, everybody, because of guys like myself and a lot of unsung heroes out there that stood their ground and rallied, protests. I'm talking about in a peaceful way. But we took it all the way to the highest level, and that allowed an opening for people like Kim Fox to be in the state's attorney's office. Because if it was no Laquan McDonald, there would be no Kim Fox. And I salute that sister. I just want to make that clear as well. There would not be a lot of the changes that have been made here. So African-American women are really rising to higher levels in all kinds of offices all across the United States. So, we look forward for Kim Fox to retain in her office without a doubt. So I just want to put that out there. But let's not forget the people that hit them streets to make the changes here in Chicago. And as an end result, there's been about an 85% reduction in police-involved killings of African-American youth in Chicago this year so far. And that comes from the fact that we basically hit them streets. And I cannot name everybody, but one day I plan to dedicate one of my entire shows to a lot of the unsung heroes, male and female heroes out there in Chicago. All right, let's bring And What Now on as we got some more calls here.
Yes, sir. How are you this morning?
I'm always good.
Good. First of all, I agree with you absolutely. Outside the high-profile individuals, it's always the people that's behind the scene that actually get the work done. So I agree with you 100%. I do agree that Kim Fox has and will continue to do an excellent job, so we don't want to get that twisted. for what I'm about to say.
Okay.
The thing that I have a problem with when it comes to our people, we know there's a bear trap sitting outside the door, but we want to go stick our head in it and then get it cut off and then go, why they treat us this way. I am against drugs and alcohol. So I am a person who has helped a lot of black men and women for over 25 years because they've been disenfranchised through drugs or alcohol, went to jail. And I'm going to say I know a brother now. No matter how many jobs I offer him, how many times he wanted to work, he still wanted to go outside and sell dope. So we cannot pretend that some of our people that's going to do what they want to do, and they don't need to be among us until they're ready to change their lives. So we don't want to let the other races think that somehow we are going to tolerate crime and bad behavior, and we should pay people and give them opportunities. After the first time, I can give you a break. But if you do it a second, a third, and fourth, fifth time, then there's no opportunity for you. So we're going to have to make sure we are clear on that part, because I know a brother now, it don't matter, and many brothers, but this particular one, don't matter what, he cut his band off, he did everything, and he's still out there. So some people, you're not going to be able to help. They have to go through the system to learn, and some of them don't even learn when they go through the system. But I'll leave you with that, and may God continue to bless.
No, I appreciate that. That means a lot to me. That's profound. You know, it's for those who want the help, not for those who need the help all the time. And we all understand that, and I understand the recovery process personally. So trust and believe me, I didn't just get here overnight. I paid my dues, all right? All right. So let's bring Brother Milton on for this call here. Brother Milton.
How you doing?
Hey, as always, I'm here, brother. I'm grateful that
I'm
God woke me
always
up this morning.
Great. Every day is great.
Yes.
Do you people realize that there is only one race on this earth, and that's the human race?
Yeah, we all understand that, yes.
You don't understand it.
I understand it, yes, indeed, Milton.
No, you don't. No, you
all
don't.
Right, break it down to me. Break it down to me.
Hey, listen. The human race has black hair and brown eyes.
Black hair and brown eyes, okay.
A blonde-haired being is not a human being.
All right, thank you, Brother Milton. I appreciate you. You had me going somewhere for a second there when you said brown eyes. I thought about the record by Mint Condition, Pretty Brown Eyes. But we'll talk again, Brother Milton. I think I got one more call before we get off the air. Terry, you want to say anything quickly?
I was following that conversation. But
that's right.
Like, okay, we're getting ready to go
somewhere else.
Right. Yes, yeah. But, yeah, we appreciate his call. So bottom line, today was a very good show. Informative, a lot of information about the voting process and what's going on, what's at stake. I've looked at some recent numbers. Iowa, Trump is leading in Iowa right now, believe it or not. And then you have some states that are toss-up states right now. So you never know how this election is going to, work out in the end. I said this early on, about 90 million people have voted early, okay, cast an early vote. So that shows you something. That's 66% of all the people that voted in the last presidential election. So we have to, the best is yet to come. That's the only thing I could tell you. So what I'm going to do now, do we have another caller waiting on us? Let's bring this last call on the line before I move on. Come on, caller, you're on the line.
How you doing, Tio? It's Henry.
Hey.
This has been touched on, by various organizations, groups, just mentioned, since Malcolm said that, in Cobra, the New Black Panther Party. But has anyone actually brought this to the United Nations or the World Court about reparations and genocide of black people here in America?
Yeah, you got my man Cam Howard here. That's stepping up to the plate, and I work with him. He's bringing it to the United Nations, and they're working on an international level. But, right now in Illinois, one of the aldermen out of Evanston, my sister Simmons, she got secured $10 million for reparations for people in Evanston from African, from descendant. If you can prove you're a descendant of slaves here in America. So she did set aside $10 million out of the marijuana funds to take care of African-American people in the city of Evanston. But on a higher level, yeah, I believe Cam Howard is definitely – matter of fact, I may have him come on the show and talk about that, okay?
Sure, that's a good idea because, this lady that was running for president, Marianne Williamson, I think it was anyway, she brought it up. But what the amount she was talking about was nothing. I mean, it was peanuts.
No, this was happening, my brother, because I have to get out here in a minute. But let me say this. Now, it's a $17 trillion price tag on reparations. Let's not get it confused. We're not going to sell out. You had people talking about, you know, African people deserve $350,000 each. That's not a number we want to settle for. Let's look at our, let's do our math. The numbers are astronomical, okay? So when it comes down to reparations, I'll be in contact with you soon, okay, brother?
All right. Well, you have my number. Give me a call. Yes.
All right, so we're about to, all right, thank you so much. And I want to thank everybody in the universe, worldwide, for checking in to the T.O. Mr. Ceasefire Hardeman Show. And before I get out of here, I always sing a little something to all the good people in the world out there. So today I'm going to wrap up with a Silk record, which I've sang this before, but I just love this record, Lose Control, bro. I love it, okay? Here we go, everybody. So this was just having a little fun, showing people that I'm human. All right, make sure my voice is good. Last night, we had an argument. You told me you love me, yeah. And all the things I said, I never meant. Nah, baby, I didn't mean to make you cry. I never meant to make you say bye.